Thank you very much, Rabbi Turk. It is a great honor to be here and make this presentation. Death is a very difficult issue to address, and I would like to begin by mentioning something that Rabbi Mark Angel once wrote about in one of his books. I don't remember the name of the book, but it was dedicated to this issue of how we deal with death. And as a sociologist, he described different societies. He described a society that he called death-defying. There are societies that deal with death on a daily basis. In Africa, they go out into the jungle and they hunt, and life and death are things that are very much part of everyday living. They face death on a continuous basis. There's obviously disease and things of that kind, and you go through life trying to escape death and defy death, but living with death as very much of a reality. I think he describes our society as a society that is death-denying. We live in a society where we try not to think about death at all. Not only in the secular world, and I think it is best illustrated by how we deal with death when death does happen in the secular world, in the world at large, in the world that we see on television, in the movies, in the media. Someone dies. What do? We embalm them. We put them in a box that's very pretty with flowers all around, organ music playing. We make them up with makeup, and people come and view them and have a wake. And this is the way we give them respect. Okay? This is something that, and if you've ever been to one of these occasions, you might have very well heard, oh my, look how wonderful she looks, or look how great, he hasn't looked this good in years. It sounds a little strange, but it's part of that concept of denying death. But it's not only in the secular world. The great Chafetz Chaim was one of the great Torah leaders of pre-war Europe, speaks about all of us, even in the most observant and even the greatest rabbinic leaders. This is for everyone. He describes everyone as somehow placing those people who die into a special society of which all of us are not members. There is a society of the dead and the dying, but we somehow are not ready to take out membership. And so we too, in our own world, very much deny the reality of death. Of course, there is another society, another culture that we live with in our world today, which is death glorifying, which Rabbi Angel did not spend much time on because it wasn't quite as prevalent at that time. But we live in a world where you pick up the newspapers and everyone tries to understand how an entire society can have parents actually ecstatic about giving up their children for the glory of what it is that death provides them. I'd like to give a little bit of an example to lead into this subject. There's a well-known story, I've heard it a number of times, maybe you've heard it and you'll forgive me, but it's a story, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it illustrates a very important point. There's a story about a young boy whose father was a groundskeeper in Fenway Park. And this boy goes with his father to the ballpark on a day when there is no game, there's no one at the stadium other than people working there, and he's sitting in the stands, and finally he takes his bat and his ball, and he walks up to home plate where at one time Babe Ruth played, Carl Yastrzemski, the great Boston players of the past, and he says, "I am the greatest baseball player who ever lived." And he takes this ball, he throws it up in the air, takes a swing, and he misses. The ball rolls away, runs after the ball, comes back to home plate, and repeats this. He says, "I am the greatest baseball player who ever lived." Throws up the ball, takes a swing, and he misses again. This goes on and on and on. And after a while, there's another groundskeeper who is watching this scene. And as this goes on, time and time again, this fellow finally walks up to this boy and he says, "Hey, kid." He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Listen to yourself. You keep saying, 'I am the greatest baseball player ever lived.' You keep throwing up the ball. You keep missing it. What are you saying?" And this kid looks at him. He says, "Mister, have you ever seen pitching like that?" It's a very, very, very valuable lesson. We perceive things in a certain way. And I think to introduce this concept, this example is extremely important. Death to us is a strike. Death to us is something that is a negative, a complete negative. Yet, if you think about it, the first thing that a Jew says in the morning, every single morning, as we open our eyes, before we even go to wash our hands, what do we say? Mode ani. Mode ani lefanecha. I give thanks to you. Melech chai v'kayam, the king who is living and eternal. Shehechazarta b'nishmasi, that you have returned to me my soul. What does that mean? It means that you accept the fact that you didn't have to get up this morning. That in fact, it is a new gift. You've just been given a new lease on life. And if you go to shul and you continue davening, you go on to say Elokai neshama shenasata bi, you go on and to expand on this concept. My God, the soul that you have given me, tahorihi, it is pure. Ata v'rasa, you created it, you fashioned it, you blew it into me. V'ata osid lidla mimeni, and you are destined to take it from me. Calls mancha neshama b'kirbi, while I have the neshama within me, I will give thanks to you, and so on and so forth. So we express this. Now, of course, again, we can run right through it and not necessarily take the message that we are meant to take. But the Jewish day begins with a very serious appreciation of the fact that life is a gift, that life is given to us again each day, and that it is not to be taken for granted by any means. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, was known as the Chacham Mikol Adam, the wisest of all men, as wise as Solomon. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, in one of his famous writings, which is part of Tanakh, in Koheles, in Ecclesiastes, part of the Bible, King Solomon says, Tov leleches lebeis evel mileches lebeis mishteh. There is greater good in going to a funeral, to a place of mourning, than there is in going to a party. Now, I know personally, I'd much rather go to a party. Even I, who do this for a living, and I do this every day, parties are certainly preferable. Then, what is Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, saying? Why is it better to go to a funeral? And the answer is right there in the same passage, the next words. He says, V'hachai yitein el libo, the living can take heart. The living can learn a valuable lesson by going to a place of mourning and looking into that casket, or seeing the closed casket and realizing that the person we've come to say goodbye to is no longer among us, gives us a perspective on life that is a reality check. And it teaches us that life is valuable, that life has purpose, and that yes, life is finite, that there is an end to this world that we know as the world in which we live. And so, tov leleches, it's actually better. You go to a party and you walk away having had a good time, but by the next morning, if you're not having a hangover, you're certainly back into the car, back on into the rat race, and you've taken very little with you. But if you go to a levaya, if you go to a place of mourning, and if you think about it seriously, and if you dwell on it, then you realize that life is extremely valuable. The portion of the Torah that we read just 2 days ago ends with these words. It says, Hayom la'asosa. Today is the day to work. Today is the day to perform the mitzvos, the commandments which the passage before described. The mitzvos, the commandments of the Torah that Hashem commanded us to perform. And it ends by saying, Hayom la'asosam, today is the day in which to perform it. And our sages explained that to mean, Hayom la'asosam, today is the day for performance. This world, every day, is the day of performance, the day of growth, the day of opportunity, the day of possibility. Every day is an opportunity for growth, an opportunity for accomplishment. Umachar, the tomorrow, which is a reference to the time that we don't like to think about, a reference to that time when we are no longer here. Machar, tomorrow, is the time, lekabel scharam, to receive the reward of all that we did in this world. So that there are very clear, defined purposes for getting a life and getting an afterlife. Life is opportunity. Afterlife is the reward, the result of that opportunity. What we've accomplished and what we have not accomplished, the opportunities we've taken go both for good and bad, are to be taken here. The reward, the result of those opportunities, the result of our choices, are to be dealt with in the world to come. And again, it's very interesting. I didn't really plan it this way, to have the parsha end with those words, but it happened to just work out that the date we picked for this shiur coincides. But Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers that we read over this last week as well, deals with this very concept in a number of places. And one famous Mishnah in Avos, Olam Hazeh, this world, is Dome Leprozdor, is comparable to an anteroom, to a lobby. The Olam Haba, in the world to come, a lobby b'fnei ha'olam haba, before the world to come. The world to come, haskein atzmucha b'frozdar, prepare yourself in that lobby, prepare yourself in that anteroom, prepare yourself in that place before you enter the great hall, which is olam haba. And it's very interesting that one of the commentaries points out that it says, ha'olam hazeh, this world, is dome leprozdar. It's comparable to an anteroom. And he says, what is it comparable? Why isn't it an anteroom? Why is it only comparable to an anteroom? He says, because if you think about it, we sit in an anteroom, we sit in the doctor's office, or we sit waiting for whatever it is to begin. We can't wait to get in there already, right? We're always waiting to get into the main hallway. You're in the lobby, you just want to get there already. But here, you don't want to get there so fast. It's only Domeliprozdar. It's only like a lobby. And yes, there is that great big chamber. There is that better place. But we're not rushing to go. How is it an anteroom? How is it a preparation? Haskein atzmachot. Prepare yourself. This is the place of opportunity. This is the place where we are given the chances, day in, day out, every day, consistently. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But every single day is an opportunity for what? And here we go back to Pirkei Avos again. Here we go back to last week's perek, last week's portion of the ethics of our fathers. And it says a very interesting, what appears to be almost a contradiction. It's in the same paragraph. It says, Yofeh Shah Achas. It is better one moment, 1 hour. Ba'olam Hazeh, in this world, Mikol Chaye Ha'olam Abba, than all the world to come. We can all believe that. It is better 1 hour in this world. We're not rushing into that world to come. And yet, the very next sentence, Yofeh Shah Achas Shel Koras Ruach Ba'olam Haba, 1 hour of satisfaction in the world to come is greater Mikol Chaye Ha'olam Hazeh than all of the life in this world. So which is greater? Is this world greater or is that world greater? There's a fascinating explanation from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, we'll talk about him in a couple of stories. The Vilna Gaon was perhaps the greatest scholar, the greatest mind in the last 500 years, I'd say for sure. The greatest rabbinic, not leader, but scholar. He wrote on all over Torah, everywhere, whether it was on ethical issues, halachic issues, a brilliant mind. The Vilna Gaon explains this Mishnah in a fascinating way. When I've read the Mishnah all the years, this is how I translate it. Better an hour of satisfaction. Koras Ruach means peace of mind, satisfaction, calm, serenity, pleasure in the sense of being completely at peace and satisfied in the world to come than all of the life in this world. We know we can go on vacations, we can travel around the world, we can go to great parties, we've been to beautiful places, we've had all kinds of accomplishments. All of that isn't worth 1 hour in the world to come. But that's not what the Vilna Gaon says this Mishnah means. The Vilna Gaon says what this Mishnah means, all of the life of this world. He says we're talking about from the day of creation till the day that Mashiach comes. 1 hour in Olam Haba is greater than all of that. All of the satisfaction, all of the joy, all of the accomplishments, all the pleasure that was ever had from the beginning of creation until the end of time by all of creation. Hard for us to fathom. But then, do we know what Olam Haba is? Do we have any understanding of what the world to come is all about? We can't begin to understand it because we're not spiritual beings, and that is a spiritual world. We are material beings. Yes, we have a spiritual part of ourselves, but we can't fathom what Olam Haba, what the world to come, is really all about. But we do know that the Mishnah tells us that 1 hour in Olam Haba is greater than all the life in Olam Hazeh, in this world. So what does it mean? Which is better, Olam Haba or Olam Hazeh? The answer is very simple. I left out a couple of words. It says, Yafeh, it is better, Shah Achas, 1 hour of Torah Umasim Tovim, of studying the Torah, learning about what we are supposed to do in life, learning about what is proper, what is improper, and the performance of good deeds in this world is greater than all of the world to come. It's when you use this world for what it was meant to be used for, growth, that is greater than all of Olam Haba. Why? Because when you take the step into that big chamber, you can't do another mitzvah. It's over. This same Vilna Gaon on his deathbed, the Vilna Gaon was dying, and he was lying in bed and he was crying bitter tears. And they asked him, why are you crying? Now think about the Vilna Gaon. I don't think we can conceive, almost as much as we can conceive of what Olam Haba is, what the world to come is, I don't know that we can conceive of who the Vilna Gaon was. But to give you a little bit of insight, the Vilna Gaon, at the end of 1 year, was taking an accounting of his year before Rosh Hashanah. He was thinking about his year. What did he accomplish this year? What did he do? Which we're all supposed to do at the beginning of the year between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We're supposed to take such an accounting. And he was extremely distraught. And he explained that there are 2 minutes in this past year that I cannot account for. Can we relate to such a person? I don't think there's an hour today that I can account for every minute of that hour. Any hour, pick any hour. Our minds wander. We went here, we go there, we do this, we do that. How focused can we remain? 2 minutes in the past year, the Vilna Gaon was beyond our understanding, way beyond. And here this man is crying on his deathbed. And they're asking him, why are you crying? You've accomplished so much. And you're going to a place that you know has so much reward. And his answer was, because in this world, for a few groschen, for a few pennies, you can buy a pair of tzitzis. That every minute that you wear that pair of tzitzis, your reward is immeasurable, is eternal. Your reward for each moment of that tzitzis wearing is worth all of this world. Is that koras ruach ba'olam haba, is that satisfaction in the world to come that is greater than all of this world, with his understanding. But where I go for all the money in the world, for all the things I've accomplished, I cannot add another mitzvah. There's no longer the opportunity to do so. And so the Vilna Gaon, who felt this, who not only knew it, but internalized it, but lived it, he cried bitter tears for the loss of that opportunity. That's how the Torah views life and afterlife. So when we get up in the morning and we say, Mode ani lefanecha, I thank you, Hashem, shehechzarta bi nishmasi, that you returned my neshama. What are we thanking him for? Yes, we're thanking him for the fact that we can get up and live a normal day and see our family and go to work and do all the things we enjoy doing. But mainly it's because here is that opportunity to build. Here's our opportunity for growth. Here's our opportunity to create a world that we will eventually have to come to. And that's what we're thanking him for in a very real way. I don't know how many of you have heard of Sir Moses Montefiore. Sir Moses Montefiore was a well-known philanthropist, was a well-known tzaddik, built many institutions. They tell a story that Sir Moses Montefiore used to disappear. I believe it was on Erev Rosh Chodesh. And no one knew where he went. For a couple of hours of whatever time it was known that somehow he wasn't around. And they found out later that what he did every Erev Rosh Chodesh was to go down to the basement of his home, which was a beautiful home. And he had his Aron and his Tachrichim. He had his casket and his shrouds. And he would dress in the shrouds and lie in his casket and remind himself, I, Sir Moses Montefiore, the great, wealthy, respected scholar, leader of his community, this is where I will end up someday. A reality check, a reminder, once a month, keep your perspective. Don't lose sight. Don't think this is forever. And I believe he lived to be over 100, if I remember correctly. He lived a very, very long life. But he knew throughout his life that this was the place of opportunity. We believe that God created each of us not only with the tools to live the kind of life that he would like us to live, but that he actually infused us with drives, with ambitions, with feelings that help us accomplish what he wanted us to accomplish. He created us just as we program a computer to do what we wanted to do. We were programmed to do certain things. And within us, there is a tremendous drive to find meaning and purpose in this world in which we live. And this is why you have so many cults out there. And this is why you have so many people searching, particularly among Jewish people, people who have not found the Torah as their guide and their purpose in life. People who are still searching, because there is within each of us a very strong drive to find meaning and purpose in this anteroom, in this chamber. And Shlomo HaMelech refers to this. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon in Ecclesiastes, says, "V'hanefesh lo timole." The soul is never fulfilled, is never full. The soul, which is the spiritual part of ourselves, is constantly yearning, is constantly searching, is constantly looking for that meaning of the time that we have in this world. And what can we do with it? What is our purpose? What is the meaning? Many of us never find it, and many of us fail, and many of us get very frustrated, and many of us lose that opportunity because of that frustration. But that is a very, very powerful and positive force if it can be infused properly, if it can drive us. I don't know if Rabbi Turk gave out, I actually reprinted an article, copied an article that it's in the back on the table. A very beautiful article that appeared a couple of weeks ago, one of the Jewish weekly newspapers by Rabbi Leff. And in it he just talks about growing up. That's the name, that is the title of the article. And the idea is that life is all about growing up. It's all about constantly growing, constantly preparing. And the idea, as the Vilna Gaon, that great tzaddik, that great achiever, could still cry over a pair of tzitzis. We never stop growing up. And one of the very beautiful things that he says in that article is he quotes from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichrono Levracha, a rabbi who passed away about 20 years ago, who explains a very beautiful expression in the Gemara. When the Talmud, when the Gemara refers to a tzaddik who died, very often it uses the term noch nafshei, his soul rested. And he explains that that means that throughout one's life the soul isn't resting. Throughout one's life the soul is searching. Throughout one's life, there is a constant battle for meaning, for purpose, for being able to accomplish that which we know is appropriate. Once we know what that purpose is, once we have found the truth, there is still that constant tension. And when a person dies, noch nafshei, now his soul has rested. Now he can enjoy the accomplishments of his life. But it's a very beautiful explanation of what noch nafshei means, that his soul rested, he has come to rest, because he has lived a life that is a life of, that was a life of meaning, a life of purpose, a life of accomplishment. If we think in those terms, we can see death not as a strike, but rather as a well-thrown pitch. We can see death as something that provides for us a tremendous incentive. It provides us, it infuses us with tremendous power. I'll tell you, I wasn't really planning to say this, but I'll tell it to you, and I think it's important. I happened to speak this Shabbos in my neighborhood. I was asked to speak, and again, there was no coordination. And I spoke on Pirkei Avos, so that's how I got to remember all these missions are in yesterday's Perek. But I mentioned that it happens to be, today is my birthday. And again, it wasn't planned. It's my Hebrew birthday. I wasn't thinking, I didn't know that July 30th would be my Hebrew birthday. But today is my Hebrew birthday, Tu B'Av is my birthday. And I mentioned the fact that I sometimes think in terms of gematria. Gematria is, there is numerical value to every Hebrew letter. Every Hebrew letter, the Aleph is 1, the Beis is 2, the Gimel is 3, and then when you get to the Yud, which is 10, the Chaf, which is the next letter, is 20, the Lamed is 30, when you get to 100, it's 200, 300, 400, and that's where the Tav is, that's the end. And many things are learned from the numerical value of words. We learned many things from it. And it struck me that my birthday, as I thought that I'm coming to another birthday, it struck me that the numerical value of my birthday is Nun Vav. And I said to myself, what does this say to me? And the answer is, no. No. How much longer? You know, the teachers of ethics, the Musar teachers, tell us that turning white is a gift from God. Wrinkles are a gift from God. Why? Because it reminds us of our mortality. It tells us that, you know, it's not forever. We're getting on. Every ache, every pain has a silver lining. It reminds us the Moda'ani that we're supposed to remember every morning. And so I said to myself, no. And then I said, if you transliterate it into English and you read the Vav and the Nun, it's Ven. No. Okay. I won't go there. Let's just leave that. Okay. But in any case, the idea is for all of us, when we say Moda'ani lefanecha, no. What can we accomplish today? This is really all an introduction. I'd like to move on to some of the very, very important issues of our day, particularly in end of life. Perhaps, I don't want to say there is no other such area, but certainly one of the most important areas of tension and conflict between the Torah view of life and the world and ethics and the secular view of ethics revolves around end-of-life issues. What do we do when life no longer is as enjoyable, as meaningful, as accomplishing as it was? People get older. People get sick. People suffer. People go into what is called vegetative states. And today, whereas 25 and 30 years ago, this wasn't that much of an issue. But today we know that doctors and hospitals are pushing for DNR orders. Do not resuscitate. Hospice is a wonderful concept. Hospice is a concept that says when a person is dying and they are terminally ill and there's no longer any hope of reversing their illness, let them live in a atmosphere that is conducive to their well-being, not physically necessarily, but emotionally. Let them live at home. Let them live in a place that is comfortable rather than a hospital room or a nursing home. Give them all of the support that you can. Let them die with dignity. And what I often say is that's beautiful, except that the emphasis is not on the dignity, but on the let them die. Hospice, if anyone is familiar with it, knows. Anyone who is familiar with hospice knows that most hospice situations will not permit, under certain circumstances, at certain stages, for people to even be hydrated. They will not allow them to be given water or any kind of nutrition, or certainly no medication, because now it's time to die. So let's do it comfortably, but let's do it already. There was a man I knew very well, a great philanthropist, traditional, I wouldn't say completely observant, but traditional, who called me that his mother had a stroke. And he was putting her in hospice care, and I recommended to him that he go, first of all, and discuss it with a rabbi. And he said, no, he spoke to the hospice, they told him they've already discussed it, their program is sanctioned by rabbis and so on. I said, is there going to be any kind of nutrition and hydration? No, they don't permit that. And I said, well, why don't you discuss it? This particular hospice is one of those hospices. I was pushing him to a particular hospice where they will allow nutrition and hydration if that is the request of the family. But nevertheless, he did not choose to go that route. He called me back, I don't remember if it was 6 or 7 days later. And he says, Rabbi, he says, I think God is punishing me. She hasn't died. He says, I don't understand it. I can't understand. They told me it would be 3 to 4 days maximum. She's still alive. What do I do? I said, well, maybe you should give her nutrition and hydration. I said, I don't know. I don't know why she's still alive. But this was the conversation. We never pursued it. She did die a day or two later. But he was frustrated. But this is probably because in his mind, it was time to die. And this is the world in which we live. It's a very complex situation. And don't get me wrong, I am not saying that hospice is wrong. There are hospice situations that are excellent. But it needs to be done with the supervision, with the understanding, with the definition of what the Torah tells us is appropriate, of what is right and what is wrong, according to Torah standards, according to Jewish values. We live in a world where assisted suicide is acceptable in certain parts of our world. Dr. Kevorkian went to jail for assisted suicide. But have you read studies of doctors that say, well, we don't publicize it? But of course we do assisted suicide. He made this a cause célèbre, and so he went to jail. But others, not uncommon, many doctors, if you read studies, if you read the medical journals, they will tell you that they feel this is ethically okay. In certain parts of the world, certain parts of Europe, this is accepted. Euthanasia is accepted. If someone feels life is no longer valuable, you can end it with their consent, and sometimes without their consent. There is a fascinating halacha, a fascinating Jewish law in Shulchan Aruch. It says a goses. A goses is a person who is breathing their last breath. A goses is someone that is so close to death that we cannot touch them, because the fear is that that extra touch will be the catalyst that will finally make them die. Because they're just so close, they're hanging on by a hair, by a thread. Every breath is labored. The halacha is you cannot touch them. Yet, the halacha is also, and by the way, I see some frowns. You are permitted to touch them for their own well-being, if they need you to help them with something, to make them easier for them, to give them some ice chips, whatever it may be. If they need something, you can. But a goses, the halacha is that someone at that stage of life cannot be touched. You shouldn't make noise in the room. You shouldn't do all kinds of things because that person is so close to death. Yet, if such a person needs your assistance on Shabbos, we desecrate the Shabbos to save that person. We will not allow them to die any sooner. If they need our help, the halacha is you desecrate Shabbos. Hatzalah will run out on Yom Kippur during Nila, during the silent Shmon Esrei of the final prayer of Yom Kippur. They'll run right out the door if a man is 99 or 103 or a woman is at the last stage of life, breathing those last few breaths. That's the halacha. That's the law. A goses is completely alive for every single purpose, for every single halacha. And if someone was to go in and hasten their death, he's a murderer. He's a rotzeach. And you would punish him to the full extent of the law. That's the halacha. There is absolutely no differentiation whether you kill someone with an entire life in front of them or you kill someone who is on their deathbed. The halacha is the same. It's ritzicha. It's murder. That's the law. There's no differentiation. And if you think about it, if you think of what life is, what is a moment of life? It's wearing tzitzis. It's worth crying for. But more than that, it's a moment of opportunity to regret what you might have done wrong in your life. Our belief is that a person can do tshuva at any time. A person can regret whatever they may have done. And in fact, when a person is about to die, we say vidui with them. We give them their last rites. The main words of these last rites are, Yehi Ratzon, may it be the will of God, Shetehei Misasi, that my death should be kapara, should be an atonement, Al Kol Avonaisai, for all of my transgressions. That's what the main purpose of last rites is. That's vidui. That's the goal. It's to realize that we didn't always do anything right, and we ask to be forgiven. And Chazal tell us, we are taught, that with that one thought, sincerely meant, we can change all of everything that we might have done wrong and turn it, not only to be forgiven, but actually to make those into merits. If it's done out of an appreciation, out of love for God, an appreciation for how good He is to us and how beautiful His Torah is, it has that power. So think about it. A minute of life? Who can place any kind of value on how much value a certain kind of life has? A minute of life is a minute of life is a minute of life, is worth crying for, is worth everything. It is yafe, it is better than all of Olam Haba, because it's an opportunity to build, to grow up, and to create for yourself an afterlife. and to change that afterlife. And you're never satisfied. I've heard people say this, great people, wonderful people, people who've lived their whole life doing the right thing. I bought my Olam Haba, you know, I gave charity to this organization and I got my Olam Haba. Or I did this heroic thing, I spent a week with someone in a hospital, whatever it may be. If I didn't have Olam Haba before, I got it now. And it's done with. We already have our Olam Haba, we pin a medal on our chest, and we're done with it. The Vilna Gaon could cry for the tzitzis he won't be able to wear. After a life where 2 minutes unaccounted for cause so much pain. That's because we don't appreciate life in view of what it really is, which is a place of opportunity. And the opportunity for growth is endless. The opportunity for growth is not only when we're out there touring the world, and it's not only when we're out there doing the things we enjoy, but perhaps it's even greater out there when we don't have those things to distract us. When all that we perhaps have is to think and to dwell upon the meaning of life, that perhaps is an even greater opportunity. I'll tell you a story. I wasn't going to start with this story, but I will. There was a woman whom I was very close to, and she was a great woman. She actually lived in this neighborhood. And towards the end of her life, she developed fibrosis of the lungs, and she had a very hard time breathing, and she had to walk with oxygen. Now, she kept up a very full life, even under these circumstances. She did things that were just unbelievable for someone in that position. But eventually, after a couple of years of living with this oxygen, she was in the hospital and her situation was deteriorating. And this was a woman who, not once, but a couple of times through her life, her later life, when I knew her, would call me and say to me, "Rabbi, I'm going in for surgery, I'm going in for this, for that. Would you say vidui with me? Would you give me my last rites? Would you allow me to say," and we would sit down and I would say vidui with her. And by the way, she recovered and she was fine. This happened 10 years before she died. She went for open heart surgery. And this is, by the way, an appropriate thing to do. A person should say vidui if a person's in a dangerous situation. Nothing wrong with saying that. In fact, it gives you the merit. Vidui is the last rites. It gives you the merit to get well. It's an acceptance of the things you did wrong and you're asking for forgiveness. Nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean if you had your last rites, you got to die. You can live. But the point is, so this woman is in the hospital. I went to visit her. She had all of her wits about her, but she was obviously in great pain. And I said to her, I was trying to think of what I could say to her to make her feel better. And I figured she also wanted to say vidui. So I came to her and I said, "Would you like me to say vidui with you, to give you the last rites?" She said yes. She was very grateful. In fact, the only time I found this was 5:30 in the morning when I got there. And we're sitting and talking. And I said to her, "I want you to know there's a very beautiful thought in Chazal, in the Torah, that defines a passage that those of you who daven might recognize. It says, Kol haneshama tehalel ka. Every soul praises the Almighty, praises God. And the Chazal turned this word around a little bit. Our sages turn this around and say, Kol haneshama, not every soul, but kol neshima, every breath. The word breath and the word soul, by the way, are related because the breath is the spiritual part of us. God breathed into us a nishmas chayim, so the breath is the spiritual part of ourselves. But what the sages explain this to mean is that we are to praise God with every breath that we take. We are to be thankful not only in the morning for the moda ani, for getting up and opening our eyes, but every breath that we take, and we kind of say that in the davening and the modim, when we say, for every moment, Shebechol Eis, Erev, Avokev, and Tzarayim, we thank God for every moment of life, morning, afternoon, and evening. And I said to her, think about this. How many of us can ever feel that we thank God for every breath? You are in a position to literally feel every breath. If you can use that opportunity to praise God and to accept this situation and be thankful for what you have under these circumstances, wow, what an accomplishment. And I told her a story that is told about the altar of Slabodka, one of the great teachers of ethics in the previous generation, where they say that he used to repeat this all the time. This was one of his favorite sayings, was this concept to give thanks to God for every breath. And as he was ill and in a lot of pain, they asked him, Rabbi, would you still feel right now that for every breath you can praise God? One of his students asked him this question. And his answer was, if I had the koyach, if I had the strength, I would get up now and I would dance for every breath with all this pain, with all the suffering that I have. I would dance for the appreciation of being here for every breath. I told her this story, and I must say, she recovered. Not fully. She came home. She was home for a couple of months. Eventually, she passed away. But the idea is, I'll call Nishima Unishima. There is a story that is told about one of the great rabbis of the generation before the war. The Dvar Avram wrote one of the famous books on ethics. He was a ethical leader in one of the great yeshivas in Europe. And the story is that he was dying. He was in the ghetto, in the Kovna ghetto. In the ghetto in Kovna. And in the Kovna ghetto, he was beaten by a Nazi, Yimach Shemo. May his memory be obliterated. He was beaten to a point where he was in horrific pain. And they had him in this hospital. And his students came and told him that the hospital is going to be burned to the ground with everyone inside. And I will tell you that I know this to be true because my uncle, should live and be well, was sitting shiva in my house when my mother, Alei Shalom, passed away. And he was telling stories of Europe. And he told us that he got to the Kovna ghetto, to the hospital, 2 weeks after it was burned down. It was the new hospital. Said had he had his injuries 2 weeks earlier, he would have been burned alive with all those people in the hospital. But the story is, and I'm not 100% clear, it's in the introduction to a sefer, you could take a look. But the story is that his students asked him whether, it's not clear whether to be moved out of the hospital or to a different place in the hospital. It wasn't clear, and his answer was that he's afraid that if they moved him now, he would die. Because he's so frail and in so much pain that, of course, to move him out of the hospital, they couldn't just carry him out on a stretcher like we would today. You wouldn't call Hatzolah to come and take you. It would have had to be on somebody's back or helping him, and he was afraid he wouldn't make it. So he said, leave me. I will live a little longer. And what did he say? He brought a proof of this concept from the story of Jonah. Jonah ran away on a ship. God asked him to do a certain mission, and he ran away, and there was a terrible storm, and they were going to throw him overboard. And Jonah said to them, throw me overboard. I am the one responsible for this storm. But he said, Sa'uni vehitiluni el hayam, lift me and cast me into the ocean. Said this great rabbi, why did he say lift me? Why didn't he just say cast me into the ocean? And the answer he gave was because he wanted that extra second of life. Lift me and cast me into the ocean. Wow. This is what you're thinking, the last minute of life, another moment, another second. And I'll tell you something fascinating that I just saw. I saw this in the Sefer Nishmas Avram, a Sefer that has been written by Dr. Abraham, who is one of the great ethicists in Jewish medical ethics, who was the ethicist in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, and who had the great zechus, the great privilege of having great rabbis in Israel direct him on his decisions, on ethical decisions, on all of these issues of DNR and hospice and organ donation and all of these issues. Brain death, it's worth reading, and I'll read to you from him in a moment. But here is a story that he recites. He tells over that he heard from one of the great rabbis of Eretz Yisrael who passed away about 10 years ago, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who asked the question. I don't know how many of you ever thought of this question, but it's a fascinating question. If you read the story of the 10 rabbis who were killed by the Romans, you read it every Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, in the Musaf, in the Chazaras Hashatz, when the Chazan repeats the Musaf, there is a section that talks about these Asara Haruge Malchus, these 10 great tzaddikim who were killed and tortured by the Romans. And it tells us that two of them were taken out. One was the Nasi, one was the chief rabbi of Israel, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and the other was the Kohen Gadol, Reb Yishmael. Kohen Gadol was Reb Yishmael, who was the high priest. And they were arguing about who should be taken first. One said, take him first, take me first, the others take the other one first. And they decided to cast lots. And the lot fell on the Nasi, on the chief rabbi, that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was to be killed first. And they killed him. Listen to what it says happened. I'll read it in Hebrew and I'll translate it. Ukshenechtach Rosho, when the head of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was cut off. We live in a world where, unfortunately, we can even relate to this. Who would have thought that we could think, the last one would have thought was the guillotine hundreds of years ago. Our world has experienced this as well. They cut off his head. Ukshenechtach Rosho, when his head was cut off, Nitolo Reb Yishmael. Reb Yishmael took his head. Vitzarachalov, and he screamed. He shouted a shout of anguish and pain. Bekol mar, in a bitter, bitter, bitter shout. Kishofar, like a shofar, a wail, like the sound of the shofar. Asked, the question that is to be asked is, how could Reb Yishmael Kohen Gadol take his head? Reb Yishmael Kohen Gadol was a Kohen. A Kohen cannot be metame. We all know a Kohen doesn't go to funerals. A Kohen cannot be involved in a Chever Kadisha. A Kohen cannot be involved in a burial society unless it's immediate family. How could Reb Yishmael Kohen Gadol take the head of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? That's the question that was put to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And you know what he answered? He said, do you think Rav Yishmael Kohen Gadol, about to be killed by the Romans who are torturing him, had the opportunity to just take the head of Rav Shimon ben Galil? He had to ask, would you let me take his head? Would you let me hold his head one more time? And they had to think about it, and they had to debate. And they made a decision, yeah, you can take his head, whatever cruel reasons, or whatever reason they thought this was somehow in keeping with what they were doing to torture these people. Said Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, by doing this, Rav Yishmael Kohen Gadol bought some time. He bought life. He bought a few more minutes, a few more hours perhaps, of life. What kind of life? Facing the guillotine. Many would say, let's get it over with. But this is what he bought. life during which he could accept the decree of Hashem. Life under the most difficult circumstances. Lift me and cast me into the sea. I'm going to burn in this hospital in the most horrific way. But it's more life. It's life. Life is here. Mode ani lefanecha. It's life. And it cannot be that you will ever be able to accomplish, to grow, to build your eternity if you leave this place. This is the anteroom. This is the chamber. And it's very interesting that I often point out that when we say Mode ani lefanecha, I thank you, Hashem, you don't thank him for the Lexus you're driving. You don't thank him for the golf you're going to be playing today. You don't even thank him for your family. You wake up every morning and you say, Shechazarta bi nishmasi. I thank you for giving me life, my neshama. If I have my neshama, whether it's in a hospital room, whether it's in my house under the best circumstances, whether it's in Bermuda, it's Shechazarta bi nishmasi. That's what's deserving of Mode ani lefanecha. That's what it's really all about. That's the reality. And that's the Tov Lelechus Lebeis Evel. I think we're running late. I'll just read one paragraph. It's actually a couple of paragraphs, and with that we'll end. We'll take some questions. The Nishmas Avram, this Rabbi Abraham, Rabbi Dr. Abraham, in his book discusses the issues pertaining to death and the definition of death that applies to all kinds of medical ethical issues, particularly organ transplantation, where some organs have to be transplanted while the person's heart is still beating. Okay? You can transplant after death. The heart, for example, has to be harvested while it is still in the process of beating, and so on. So these are serious issues. But here is what he writes after 25 or 30 pages of going through very complex and intricate issues. And I'll read it because I think it's important. Many of us in our lives are faced with very, very, very difficult decisions. And the world out there is so clear. I don't want to live that kind of life. I don't want to have to be a burden to others. We'll talk about that more next week, the burden to others and the quality of life. But it's a very complex issue, and it's a heart-wrenching issue. It's an issue that very often places people under tremendous stress, guilt on the one hand, guilt for their own feelings, guilt for living up to other people's expressed feelings. Sometimes there are family conflicts. It is complex. But I'd like you to hear what he says. In conclusion, I cannot emphasize strongly enough that these are life and death decisions. These referring to taking people on respirators, off respirators, DNRs, brain death, what is death, what isn't death. These are life and death decisions that could be made only by a posek, by a rabbi who knows these laws, who must be made fully aware of the medical facts as decided by a full team of medical experts. The rabbi needs to be fully informed to be able to make a fully informed decision. Unlike the world at large, that is more and more coming to believe that there is no difference between withholding and stopping nourishment, oxygen, and treatment in a terminal and even not so terminal patient. What that means in lay words, in simple words, are the world doesn't believe there's a difference between pulling a plug, stopping someone who is already taking certain medications or is already on certain life support systems, and withholding it to begin with, not putting them into that situation. There are very big differences in halacha. And as he said, an even not so terminal patient. We're talking about the woman who had no more time to live quality. Let's not give her any hydration or nutrition. She's terminal. What does terminal mean? How many days is terminal? What decides what is terminal? Halacha clearly differentiates between the two, between withholding and stopping. Stopping, listen to this, is never permissible. And withholding may be, but only in very particular circumstances, and then only with the express ruling of a recognized and medically informed posek. No two patients and no two circumstances are exactly alike. And only a posek can decide when one may allow a patient to die and when one must continue to fight, even for a few more moments of life, even if only artificially maintained. As physicians, he's writing this for doctors, we should approach these very difficult problems of life and death with humility and realize our fallibility and lack of absolute knowledge. We must accept completely the tenets of our Torah as expounded by our sages, with the readiness to listen to and put into practice what they tell us. We must be willing to control our emotions, including those of pity and compassion, within the boundaries set by the Torah. We who hold life and death in our hands must therefore continually remind ourselves that the Almighty only gave us permission to treat. And that is to doctors. But we ourselves need to know that sometimes we are placed in these positions where we have to make those decisions. We need to be guided by the one who created this world and gave us the direction as to how to deal with all issues, little and big, so that we can use this life to grow, to constantly grow up. And so, with the understanding of the clear difference of what this world's purpose is and what the great purpose of the next world is, understanding the afterlife and living with it as a reality can really help us define our every moment of life itself. Thank you.